I'll hit that.
There you go.
My sponsor used to say, and God rest his soul, and he had what I wanted, so I do what he did. I'm a grateful recovering addict, member of Progressive Recovery. My name's Paul V. And this is great. I mean, this is like incredible. Gloria, thank you. I was laughing when you told Dawn, when you said up here you couldn't, you had to stop because you can't breathe anymore. I have like advanced COPD, so this meeting's going to be real short. You can't talk, I can't talk, but, so we'll bring up a third person to share, a newcomer. Anyway, if you're new or you're coming back, welcome home. You're off the hook. And that's what was said to me a long time ago, and it's still true today. You know, doesn't matter if you get here once and you stay, or if you get here once and you bounce in and out for 10 years. If you're here today, you've got the most you're ever going to need to get. That's one day. I'm just so blessed, man. I look around this room. There's people I shot heroin with. There's a guy in this room. There's two guys I shot heroin with. But one of them, he just came in a couple of years ago. He came back a couple of years ago. And he walked into my home group and he says, you and I shot heroin together. I said, look, I shot heroin together with a lot of people. They're all dead. And I don't know what that means. And he looks at me and says, no, we shot heroin in 1965 in the back of your father's taxi cab. Now, there's nobody that knew to my father, God rest his soul, was a cab driver. So anyway, Steve's here, and he's got coming up on 2 years. Thank God. And then there's another guy right here, coincidentally sitting right next to him. So if they don't like this meeting, they'll go out and get shit-faced together. Joel and I, in the 60s, went to the beaches together. They used to call Joel, he was like a hot guy. By the way, just for you women here, I used to be a chick back then. No, I was 145 pounds.
All right.
I walked into my first NA meeting. I was wearing a three-piece blue suit. I had one of these flowered shirts on. I had a pit pad. And I had an attaché case. And I had the walk. And there was nothing in the attaché case. I was 145 pounds. And 34 years later, I'm 245 pounds. Instead of being a 31 waist, now I have to wear women's pregnancy pants because nothing fits me anymore. As I was talking to someone in New York the other day, I said, that's not really that bad, it's only 2 pounds a year. So, I'm a happy camp, just like Lori said. Now, this thing's about laughter. The war is over. Okay, you're here with people that love you unconditionally. And you talked about finding that guy with 5 years and following him, and that's what we all do. When I got to my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, there were 6 people there. Okay, and it was the only meeting in Broward County of Narcotics Anonymous. And I was beat up, in case you have a hearing problem. I'm from New York, and I got thrown out of New York, and I came down to Florida. Obviously, I'm not going to tell a drug log, but the last person I heard say that, they said I'm not going to tell a drug log, and 40 minutes later, they were still in high school. But I'm really not, okay? I can sum up most of my drug log by saying the following. I'm from Queens in New York City. 1965, the Beatles came to Shea Stadium. I woke up 15 years later. That's my story. Now, in between that, there's jails, there's overdoses, there's mental hospitals, which they now call treatment centers. There was methadone programs, and all of that stuff. And then I, 1980, I was blessed to get thrown down to Florida. 1979, in the summer, I moved down here. And by this time, I was on Social Security Disability Insurance. Because I became a mental patient. Not that I became one. I think we're all mental patients. However, the United States government determined that I was a mental patient. And by that determination, they were giving me all of this money not to work. I believe to this day, you know, that Ronald Reagan, who was the president, used to have these meetings at the White House. And they looked and they said, well, you know, when they sent me money, I ended up in trouble less. And they kept sending me the money. I moved down to Florida. The checks were waiting. So, you know, I bounced around in Fort Lauderdale for 6 or 7 months. And I wasn't even at a bottom. You know, that's another thing. If you don't think you're at a bottom, that's fine. Because my bottom was 1969. The last time I enjoyed music was at Woodstock. I was really there, unlike the people who had, I know you were there, Robin. As a matter of fact, you're still there. You're the only person that looks the same from Woodstock. I mean, that's a compliment, you know. You know, he's the best. I love him so much. I have so much history with so many people here, and that's what happens in Narcotics Anonymous. If you suit up and show up and you come here and you let us love you back to life, and then it's your responsibility to find someone else to bring them along. Because you can't just get this thing and then go to the Intercoastal and smile and say how wonderful your life is. Because it's your responsibility, it's your debt of gratitude for me to the God of my understanding for bringing me out of the gutter, whatever gutter you came from. It doesn't matter because it says in our literature, we don't care what or how much you use, who your connections were, what it's done to you. We just care that you're here. So I got here and my first meeting, by the grace of God, was my last first meeting. But that doesn't mean that I'm any different from people that passed in and out for 10 years, because for 11 years in New York City, from 69 to 1980, I didn't know about this thing. So I was going lower and lower, and when I thought it couldn't get any lower, it got lower yet, and it just kept getting worse. And I ended up, there was an old Dylan song that, you know, what's a sweetheart like you doing in a place like this? And I kept ending up in those places. I mean, in 1967, I don't know if you saw that movie, The American Gangster. Well, I lived in Harlem, okay? And I mean, even Will knows I didn't belong in Harlem, right, Will? I was there, and I was 145 pounds, and I lived on 117th Street, Lenox Avenue. And the only thing that I have left from Harlem is my red shoes. That's the only thing I have left that still fits. My shoe size hasn't changed. And then there was a panic in Harlem in 67, and I moved to another real high-end place called Alphabet City. And I lived on 10th Street in Avenue B. And you know, because we're all chameleons, and we're all actors, and we can play any part that we're told, and the longer you're out there, the greater an actor you are. So when I was in Harlem, I was black. I was. You said there were no black people there. I was here. But I am a brother. And I walked the street. Hey, what's going on? And I get everything I copped. I didn't get beat that many times. I didn't get beat up that many times. And then I moved to the Lower East Side, and I became Puerto Rican. No big deal. Hey, que pasa? Quieren todo perico por favor. I had a Fu Manchu mustache, and I fit right in. And then the next day, I would go to work on Wall Street with a three-piece suit and an attaché case. Just tell me what you want me to be. Give me 5 minutes to get in costume, and I'll be there. And you know, that stayed true for a long time after I was clean. Today, by the grace of God, almost what you see is what you get. Almost, and it's a process. Whether we have physical issues, mental, that's what happens. You know, my wife, God love her, is also a breast cancer survivor. 21 years. And I thank God for that every day. And we're real involved in breast cancer fundraising up in New York, where I still am half the year. And you know, Madge let us in. You come here, you know, you could have like the worst thing in the world hanging over your head right now, maybe 30 years in prison. You've got a terrible disease, whatever it may be. Your old lady left you, you're under indictment, The IRS seized your house. All of these things, by the way, happened to me, Queen. That's why they jumped through my head. And many others. However, if you pick up whatever is happening, whatever you're afraid of, what may or may not happen, or whatever's hanging over your head, if you pick up, those things are still there. And whatever's going to happen by you picking up, those are all the additional problems. So, you know, that's why my sponsors, God rest his soul, and I've had four great sponsors that have saved my ass. Because, like you said, if you don't have someone to guide you, okay, the way I look at my sponsor, whoever that is that, well, there's a lot of old people here, so you'll remember this. Matter of fact, this is like an AARP meeting of narcotics. I'm looking around the freaking room. Unbelievable. Vito got clean before there was AARP. I'm looking around here. There's some old people in this room. Wow. This is wild. And so the way I look at it, at sponsorship or a sponsor is back in the day, another term I hate, but back then, they had this thing called AAA, the American Automobile Association.
Still got it?
Yeah. Great, but I bet you they don't have this anymore. Which was, if you're going on a trip from New York to wherever, California, Georgia, whatever, you would call them up, this is before internet, and texting, and email, and Facebook. You would call them up, and Instagram, and tweeting, you would call them up and you say, look, I'm going here to here, and they would say, no problem, we'll send you a trip ticket. And it's a mail. I know everybody here knows that. You say this to young kids, they look at you like, what are you talking about, a trip ticket? They think that's acid. So they send you this whole book showing the entire route that you're going to take. And in this book, it tells you many things. It tells you the places where you have smooth driving, no issues. It tells you the places where there's construction. It tells you the places where you have to slow down because there's speed traps. It tells you the places where you can get safe washing. It tells you the places where there's good places to eat. It maps out your entire trip. And to me, my sponsor is my trip tick through Narcotics Anonymous.
Amen.
Because he's been where hopefully I'm going to go. And that's the reason, that's the whole deal. You know, my first meeting I saw someone had a t-shirt on and it said, I can't, we can.
Amen.
All of these years later, I can't do this alone. I just came back from Las Vegas, not Italy or anything. But I thought I was in Italy because it was Las Vegas and I was asking Bellagio. So they convinced me I was in Italy. But I still went to three meetings in the 5 days I was out. You know, my sponsor always, I was asked by sponsor, and I think he was dead 5 years when I understood this. I said, Fred, how many meetings do you go to? He says, I go to one more meeting than I need.
There
you go. I didn't understand that. What do you mean one more? I didn't understand a lot of what he was saying. But, you know, they told me you go to 90 meetings a night. I just keep doing it. I don't count my meetings. The one thing I guarantee you, I have an overdose from going to too many meetings. The other thing I can guarantee you is as sad as I am, I never got arrested for driving while fat. So I'm a little happy fat too, what can I tell you? But I'm pretty happy. You know, I've got a pretty blessed life today. My last residence in New York City was Creedmoor State Hospital. Now, if you're not from New York, I know Lenny, you missed that place. I don't quite know how, but it's not too late. And my place in Creedmoor was a rocking chair. And I would watch a television that didn't work. And I would dribble. And you know, a lot of my friends, like during the NCAA tournaments, the basketball tournament, I mean, a football tournament. A lot of my friends really went to college. Like my friend Phil, who I got clean with, he went to Penn State. My friend Phil Diamond, right? Who said that? Ned? Hey, right, right. There's a couple of people that still remember Phil. And my friend Don in the back, he went to Ohio State. And my ex-business partner, Richard, he went to Florida State. The reason I get depressed during that time of year of the tournament is because I went to Creedmoor State. We did not have a football team. If we did, our motto would be first and goal forever, because we couldn't get off the couch. We were like dribbling our way to recovery. Anyway, I was always a happy kid. I was a happy dope fiend. There's no addiction in my family, so you don't need to worry about that. If you are or you aren't, or your whole family is homeless, or you never met a drug addict. If you're here, it's probably no mistake. I mean, it's Saturday night in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and if you came for this food and to listen to this nonsense, you probably have an issue. I'm not telling you you're an addict, but look in the mirror when you go home. We don't tell anyone they're an addict. Although looking around here, not that much discussion either. So, I went from this happy kid in New York, and I wouldn't say I was successful in New York, but I went on methadone when it was experimental in 1969, facing time in prison, and they gave me an out. They said it was when the Rockefeller Law just came out, and they said, if you go on this new thing called methadone maintenance, you won't have to go to prison. I said, well, Jews don't do well in prison, so send me to this thing. I mean, except Zizi and Zizi back then. They took care of my prison time. And I went on 120 milligrams of methadone in 1969. They have since found out that's enough to kill a family. But the great news, I couldn't get high. I would take, you only had to go twice a week. So I would come home and I'd have my weekend take out in a paper bag. So I wouldn't take it on Friday. So Saturday night, I had 240 milligrams. And I was married to this little girl, Sharon, mother of my daughter. So I drink the 240 milligrams. I'm on the couch. My head is on my sneakers. And she says, you told me you weren't going to get high. I said, Sharon, I swear I just drank the methadone. So you didn't have to worry about getting high. You couldn't get off the couch. You also couldn't get off the methadone when that time. So, the last thing I'm going to say about being out there, certainly not the last thing I'm going to say. Faye, when I was sitting down there, she says, we're going to leave. We're going to go to Saturday Night Live for another meeting. I said, go. I'm here. I don't care if anybody's here. I love this. So I'm in New York, and I was obviously the black sheep of my family. I wonder why. And I started doing pretty well financially. I was a national sales manager of a home improvement company. And as long as I went and got my method on, I was very functional. And so I wanted to show the family, after all the car accidents, the arrests, and every story they would hear, what happened to Paul now. That was the way the family would go with phone calls. So I called up my cousins in Maryland, 210 miles away from where I live. And this is the way I was going to put it out to the family about how great I was doing. I got tickets from a scalper to the number one show on Broadway in 1976. It was a show called Equus. I don't know if anyone ever saw it. Some people are shaking their heads. Maybe you were there. Well, maybe one day I'll get there. Or even though I was there too, Len. So what happened, I get these great seats, second row center seats, and They drive the 210 miles up to New York. My daughter was 2 years old at the time. God bless her. She's 40 in December. And they come to my apartment. They see my daughter. I live in Bayside. And we drive into the city in my luxury car. And I take them to a sumptuous dinner in Rosloff's Steakhouse on 46th Street. And then we walk around the corner to the Helen Hayes Theater. And we walk into the Helen Hayes Theater and we're dressed up and we're sitting in the second row. Now this show, Edwards, from what I remember, is a very quiet, somber show where Anthony Perkins, God rest his soul, is talking to the audience as if they're in space. He's a psychiatrist. And it's very quiet. I don't think anybody understood the show. I mean, I swear to God. I do know that there was a horse on the stage, a make-believe horse. And at a very, very quiet time of the show, Anthony Perkins asked the audience a question. Now, I come from a pretty good family, and I was told when someone asks you a question, you answer. Sadly, the other 1,800 people knew it's what was known as a rhetorical question. I didn't get that memo. So what happened? On February 1st, 1976, at this very quiet time of this very quiet play on Broadway in New York City, I stood up. And I was right here. I was no further away than this table from the stage. And he asked this question. And he had a pipe and these little horn-rimmed glasses. I stood up and I said, "That's because my name is Paul Efron." Well, let me share with you what happened from that moment. And this is like they say in the movies, that's told too, because I certainly don't remember. My wife and my cousin Mark looked behind me like, what just happened? You know, my wife knew I wasn't an understudy for the show. The one thing I believe to this very minute is that half of that theater thought I was in the show. Because it would have made as much sense for some moron stands up from the second row, yells at Anthony Perkins, but I promise you there were three people that knew I wasn't. So they pulled me down. 10 minutes later, I did it again. We were asked to leave the theater. The next 12 months of my life, I spent in some of the finest and not so finest mental hospitals in New York City. And it was progressive. I went from the top ones, Hillside General Hospital, down to Elmhurst General Hospital, down to Long Island Jewish Hospital, and as I told you, I ended up in Creedmoor State Hospital. I made the whole tour, like my friend Gaspar said, of the houses for the very, very nervous. That's where I went. And the longer I was there, the more nervous I got. So I became suicidal. I committed suicide. I was in a coma for 6.5 days. They told my parents and my wife, I was in Long Island Jewish Hospital, they said, don't waste your time visiting the 10 minutes every 2 hours that you're allowed to visit in intensive care. Because if he happens to live, he's going to be a vegetable. By the grace of God, I don't understand where and how these cards were played out. I really don't. And I don't know why I'm so fortunate to be here when so many others aren't. I don't know that. I can't tell you. But they were nicer to me. I don't know. I don't get that. What I do tell you, I treasure the fact that I didn't die then. I treasure the fact that I have the life I have today. I treasure the fact that by the grace of God, I got clean in Narcotics Anonymous on February 12, 1980. That's a long freaking time. Okay? I mean, I was 31. I was right before my 32nd birthday, and I just turned 66. To go back on Social Security. How cool is that? I'm like a double winner. I went, I went down to Coconut Creek to close the church. They said, "Oh, you've been on this before." I said, "Yeah, let's do it again." I mean, really, how insane is this, God? But here's the thing, because I didn't think I was at a bottom. And this is why, you know, I really believe this, and think about this when you go home, whenever that might be, 11:30. That I think life is really about seconds and inches, moments. That if this didn't happen, that wouldn't happen. And if this happened, it prevented that from happening. And the reason I know that is there's been a zillion of those things in my life. And I'm going to tell you the one that was probably the most important to me, and the reason, one of the reasons that I'm standing up here today. I walked into this meeting. There was an article in the newspaper. It was in the Miami Herald about this brand new program that I just started in Broward County called Narcotics Anonymous. It was borrowed from Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was an interview with two people, a man and a woman. And they told my story in the newspaper. Overdoses, heroin, jails, methadone. And I said, wow, you know, it's pretty amazing. I was down in Fort Lauderdale, right? So I cut the article out. A couple of weeks later, I made the phone call. And this guy, Curtis, who, believe it or not, I saw today, okay, he picked me up and took me to my first meeting. And it was at the Lutheran Church, the St. Francis Mission on Southeast 6th Street in Fort Lauderdale by the courthouse. And I walked into the meeting. It was this dark room. They had these steps on the wall. And I'll tell you what, I didn't want to be there. I just figured it was another place that I didn't belong. And I got up to leave. And this is where the first, second, and inches thing happened in my life. It probably happened in the 70s and the 60s, but this is the first one I was aware of. At about 8:28 p.m. on Tuesday night, February 12, 1980, I'm walking. I went to Curtis. I said, "Thanks. Sorry I bothered you. I'll get home on my own." And I was walking out the door. At that exact minute, not a minute before, and not a minute after, in walked the guy from my block in Queens, New York City, that I shot heroin with. We were arrested together. His arrests were in the paper, just like mine. And he's walking into this little ministry in Fort Lauderdale. So we hugged. I ended up back in the room. I picked up a cup of coffee and I sat down. And Mark, God rest his soul, was sitting at the table. Now, he died this past year clean, by the way, 33 years clean. And I didn't do a backflip and say, "Oh, wow, I found God," because I didn't know what God was, you know. Remember, I got to the rooms, I didn't know if I was an atheist or an agnostic, you know, and I found out I was an ignoramus. So what happened, Mark started telling his story. And I didn't need to listen to the story because I lived it with him. He sat in the front of that room and he said, "You know what? I haven't found it necessary to pick up a drink or a drug for 6 months." Amen. Now, I knew Mark was a hope to die doping just like me. He couldn't go 6 weeks. As a matter of fact, he couldn't go 6 days. As a matter of fact, the only time people like us refuse a drink or a drug is if we misunderstood the question. I mean, I don't know about you, but I was never a person that said, "Oh, no thanks, I've had enough." I had enough when I was freaking unconscious when I couldn't tell you I had enough. The last time I said I had enough. So, hey, well, we didn't have T-tags then, by the way. You know, which we spent $200 million on. We have these little white poker chips that you bought a box of in 7-Eleven of 100 of them for 99 cents. Seems to work. And they offered this white chip for anybody that was sick and tired of being sick and tired. Pick one of these up. and they shoved me up to the front of the room. By the grace of God, you people, the mentors that came before me, the people that came after me, I haven't found it necessary to pick up that knife. I already told you there's been a ton of tragedies since I'm clean. But you don't come in here and skip up the 12 golden steps of life and never experience a negative emotion. That's not what it's about. You come in here, and if you grace and bless to stay clean, you get to experience life. So the fact that I've been here for half of my life, I've had half of a life of experiences, no matter what it is. And Nag later said, I go to meetings of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, my first sponsor, Joe, he was at that meeting. And he's still alive. I love him. You know, he lives up in Boynton, Delray. And he talked about, he was in Trenton State Prison. And he had scars on his face. That's why I asked him to be my sponsor. But I really didn't want to, like, screw around anymore. I was done. I wanted someone I was afraid of, that if he told me something, I was going to listen. When I heard this guy say, he says, I was in Trenton State Prison. And I've done X number of years. And then they call me to parole board and they say, you know what? We will cut 6 years off your sentence if you get on this methadone program. He says, and I looked at them and I told them, give the methadone to your wives and your mothers and your kids. I'm going to do my time. And I looked at this guy. I said, holy shit. I took methadone. Just give me if I don't have to go to prison. And here's a guy sitting in prison. They want to take the methadone again. So anyway, so I asked him to be my sponsor. And it was bad. There wasn't that much of a choice back then. You know, and everybody that was a choice back then, they were all passed. It was Big Robert, God rest his soul. It was Mark Friedman, God rest his soul. And, you know, a few others. But Joe was my guy. So now in 1980, there were really no rules, just for the record. No, there really weren't. I mean, I know that they don't get involved in a relationship, you know, whatever. But look, I was using for a very long time, and there were a lot of women that were also using for a very long time. And as I told you earlier, I was a chick magnet. So that's what we did. We started meetings, we met women, we started meetings, we met women. The first meeting that we started was in South Florida State Hospital in the forensic unit. I felt real comfortable there. They were the mental patients. I mean, these people were drooling out there. And you know, so that's the first meeting that we started. So anyway, so by 90 days, I met the woman of my dreams. But it was a good 90 days. I mean, I was in the deal. And she also had 90 days. God rest us all. Christine, she died clean from cancer. We hooked up. And this was it, man. I mean, this was like the romance of life. This is what I've been waiting for. I used all of those years. I was now divorced from my wife. And wow. But I was still on disability. Where are we going to live? Keep in mind, we have 90 days. And she says, I have an idea. My boyfriend, my boyfriend, Bumper, who was an international drug dealer, and they lived on the water of 26th Street in Federal Highway in Fort Lauderdale, he's out on a drug run. Why don't we move in, you move in with me at this house, and when he comes back, we'll just find someplace. I said, Chris, that's a great idea. So now, Christine and I, living in Bunker's big bed, in May of 1980, we're roaming around town, we're starting meetings, we're like the NA newfound couple of the year. It was great. Until one Sunday morning, Joel, who I spoke to you about, with the scars, the trying to stay prison again, he calls me up, and he says, Paul, would you come to the house for a minute? Yeah, what's up? Just come on up here. Now, I figured, quite honestly, Joe was asking me to come up there to tell me how great I was doing, how proud he was of me, that I'm going to meetings, we're taking meetings at the Concept House, we're starting meetings in Broward County, in Western Broward, and Saturday Night Live. We're starting all these meetings. I mean, it was cool. We started progressive recovery. We're doing all of this stuff. And I figured he's going to come and just tell me, Paul, I'm so proud of you. So I go knock on his door. He was in the air conditioning business back then. I knock on his door. He comes out. He walks outside. He had a truck, his repair truck in the driveway. And he comes out and goes and sits in the truck. He reaches under the seat. He pulls out a .357 Magnum. He puts it to my head. And he says, if you're not out of that fucking house by the morning, I'm going to blow your brains out. He puts the gun back under the seat. Now let me tell you something. I have read the basic things. I've read how it works, the who and why, the where and that, all of the pamphlets. I've read the whole deal. Nowhere in here does it say sponsor pulls teeth on me. Just doesn't say it. I've researched it. And if you said that today, they throw you out. Oh my God, you know what he said to me? My sponsor treated me so cruelly. Anyway, by the grace of God, I moved out that morning. And Chris stayed clean and so did I. Okay? And, but I had to get a new sponsor because I didn't want every time I screwed up to have a piece put to my head. So I got a new sponsor, God rest his soul, Fred T. And Fred T passed going on 10 years ago. And he was the one that directly saved my life. He was the straight through guy. He was the guy that saw me from the gutter. He was the guy that was there 24/7, which I needed someone there 24/7. And, you know, Fred told me, he said to me very simply, he said, do me a favor. I want you to call me every day at 5:30. So what am I going to say? He said, just call me every day at 5:30. Let me know where you were for the day, what you're doing the rest of the day, and like that. So I did that. I mean, I really was so scared I was following directions. There was no bargaining, no anything else. Whatever you told me, I was ready to do. So I called him every day, 5:30. About a year and a half later now, and I'm now, you know, I'm getting into the deal. I'm a year and a half clean. This fellowship is growing. I'm in the middle of it. I'm loving it. I'm watching it. A lot of lives are being saved. I'm feeling better. We're all a group together. And I still call Fred every day. So one day I go up to him and I said, Fred, I have a resentment. That's a word you learn here, by the way. I mean, you can't go to Harlem and tell your connection, I have a resentment. But you can tell your sponsor, I have a resentment. And he says, what's the problem? I said, Fred, I have called you every day for a year and a half. And I haven't missed one day. And you haven't called me once. You believe that?
Yeah.
He looked at me. And he had these little horn-rimmed glasses. It doesn't matter how long you quit. No, those are my set lists. I don't need the right ones. He looked at me. And I said that. And he pulled his glasses off. And he says, you know what, Paul? As soon as you have something I want, I'll be sure to give you a call. And he walked away. Now, if you tell someone that today, they call World Service in California. You know what he said to me? How cruel he was, how mean he was to me? Oh, my God. And you know the other thing that my sponsor told me? And then we're going to close it up pretty soon. Hey, two more bottles of water. No, no, it really is. The importance of humor. That's the only thing that got my attention. They didn't get my attention by telling me to work the steps. They didn't come get my attention by telling me to get on my knees. They didn't get my attention by telling me to go and find another drug addict. They got my attention by telling me stories. Like they said, you know, Paul, there was a 6'6" wrestler. And he married a 5-foot-tall little girl. And they went on their honeymoon. And they go up to their honeymoon room, and he decides from day one, he wants to establish the rules of this relationship. So he takes off his long overalls, he throws them across the bed, and he says, here, I want you to put those on. He says, what do you mean put those on? I'd be swimming in them. They're 3 times my size. He says, that's right. I want you to know from day one, who wears the pants in this family? So she thinks for a minute. She sits down on the bed. She reaches under her tiny little miniskirt, and she pulls off her tiny little panties. And she throws them across the bed again.
Oh, my God.
Says, here, why don't you get into those? He says, what do you mean? I can't get into those. She says, that's right. And you never will until you change your attitude. That's the message of narcotics tonight. We need a total change in attitude. The war is over. We get out of ourselves. We try to help somebody else. And, man, I'm going to tell you what. I have a lot of rest in pieces in my story. But you know what? I also have a lot of joys and blessings and people that are still here in my story. Matter of fact, my sponsor today, Vincent, who's got 36 years, he lives in Naples now, from Brooklyn. And, you know, Joe Ring. So, Joe Ring's sponsor. So Vincent knows me my whole recovery, okay, from New York. And when I asked him to be my sponsor after everybody else died, or you. Now, Vincent has had 18 heart surgeries. And I asked, I said, Vincent, look, I really need a sponsor, because I don't believe you ever get to a place where you don't have a sponsor. And I'd like you to sponsor me. He says, Paul, quite frankly, I'm not looking for that job description. He says, I've had 18 heart surgeries. Everybody in your story is resting. He says, I'm not really signing up for that. So anyway, Vincent has sponsored me for a while, and we have a great relationship, and I've had the blessing to sponsor many, many, many people. As a matter of fact, I was telling Don on the way here, I sponsor a guy in New York. You know, like, didn't come in at all bottoms. You know, he came in his mid-50s, pretty successful, and, you know, he's an active media guy now. He called me on his way to Kennedy Airport. He's involved with a big charity in Africa. He's flying to the Vatican. He has a private meeting, as he said, with the Holy Father. Okay? I mean, I guess that's a big deal, right? Oh, the big guy. A private meeting with him. He said, what? Yeah, that's right. Gambino's above him or below him. He's up there. He's got the red thing. Hold it. He's a cool guy, though. And listen to this. He's staying at the Vatican. This dope fiend who's clean is staying at the Vatican. I hope they don't lose any of their jewelry. And then the day after, he's making a presentation to the entire financial cardinals about how they need to donate money to Africa homelessness. So you know what? Anything can happen. Anything. The sky is the limit. It gets better and better. And when you think you can't get any better, it gets better yet. There's no end to the good. And I promise you, there's one last thing. I don't care what your day was like. I don't care if you had the worst freaking day on the planet. Or I don't care if you're skipping through the tulips today. Two things. Number one, it's going to pass. Good, bad, or indifferent, everything passes. And number two, if you stay clean for 24 hours, when you go home and you go to sleep, just say thanks. Because that's the strongest prayer on the planet. Thanks for listening.
Holy.